Being human, do you ever wonder what makes us who we are? Our habits, preferences, or where we came from? We are expressing ourselves in thousands of ways every day through our choices. Let's have a conversation with people who are having interesting lives. My name is Alan Walker. I'm a doctor of chiropractic and a human being. Hello, welcome again to the next podcast. I think it's a podcast number 9 of Being Human. Today, I'm very pleased to say that we've got a new associate working with us. And Brent started with us, several weeks ago now. It's worked out really well. He's a chiropractor. He's a chiropractor that's come all the way from South Africa, and he's worked in different countries to include, obviously, the UK, Netherlands. And when he's worked in South Africa, I'm not really sure how long, but I imagine it was something like sort of 10-ish years, something like that. But we're going to find out now in this conversation. There's a load of things I don't know about him and I want to know. So please, you know, sort of listen in and find out more about Brent's chiropractic and how he sees chiropractic, how he sees the future, a bit about his past and family and friends and that sort of thing, and what's brought him to the UK. So welcome, Brent.
Thank you very much. Thank you, sir.
So with yourself, if you don't mind starting at the beginning, you know, a lot of people, I don't know enough about you really, and certainly I'm sure that the people who come see your clients don't know too much about you. What brought you to the UK, and where did your sort of journey start? You know, did you obviously were brought up in South Africa. How long were you in South Africa for?
Well, I suppose it's a good thing to sort of catch up and a whole bunch of 40 something years within just a few minutes. Born in South Africa, in a small town, technically just outside Johannesburg, called Benoni, which is part of Johannesburg. It's a place where, you know, people in South Africa don't admit to being born in. However, it's home to a couple of very famous people, Charlize Theron being one of them, Princess of Hollywood, I suppose, and literally Princess Charlize of Monaco. She's also from Benoni. Not that I have a real bone in my body, but it is quite famous in that regard. Essentially from Johannesburg in that area. Then we moved down to a small town just outside Durban, which is on the coast of South Africa. More on the southeast coast, small village outside of there. Now it's really pretty much a small town, I guess. It was a very popular holiday destination for people from Johannesburg, called Amanzimtoti, steeped in sort of Zulu history. Then moved back to Johannesburg when I was closer to about 14, 15.
I'm interested in that. Steeped in the sort of history of the Zulus.
And, yes.
I don't know an awful lot about the Zulus. What is the what sort of history have you got there of that particular tribe?
So you know Shaka Zulu, right? You've heard of Shaka Zulu.
Yeah.
Yes. So Shaka Zulu was the king of the Zulu nation. Essentially, it was him that brought together a whole bunch of tribes and made it as one, and called the Zulu. He called it the Zulu Kingdom. He was known to be a ruthless military, I wouldn't call him a dictator so much, but being the man, the boy who would be king, essentially. He was born sort of this weakened, in this weakened state, this very much the boy who would not live past his 13th birthday, essentially. Then he, through lots of trials and errors, he became a man. He was very famous for killing a leopard, essentially with bare hands, but with basic tools. That's how the legend goes. He rose to the state. His stepfather, if I'm not mistaken, that was the king of the chief of of his village. He became chief eventually. Became Zulu king, like I said, because he brought all the different tribes together, and through quite militant means became a king of the Zulu nation. It was very famous in Amanzimtoti, why it was called Amanzimtoti. In Zulu, it means the water is sweet. It was originally called, he wanted to call it Amanzimnandi, which means the water is nice. Because during one of their military marches to, I don't know, to war battle, they stopped at this river in Amanzimtoti, and he took a drink of the water, and he said Amanzimnandi, which means this water is nice, or the river is nice. But his mother's name was Nandi, so he thought it would be an insult to name it Amanzimnandi, so it was called Amanzimtoti, which means the river is sweet, and that's where the name of the village comes from. It's kind of steeped in history of the area where the English settlers came from Durban, which is in the province of KwaZulu-Natal. It's called now, but it used to just be called Natal, which is Portuguese for, the Portuguese word for Christmas, which was discovered on Christmas Day. And now it's called KwaZulu-Natal, which means the place, KwaZulu means the place of the Zulus. So it's so steeped in that cultural history, which is obviously being a huge part of South Africa. It was great growing up there and learning about that history. I think honestly that's where a big love of my history comes from.
I spent some time in Kenya. I was there, I had a couple of holidays there, and I remember walking on the beach and looking around me at the people who were living there, and trying to count how many different tribes I was looking at. And I was only, I don't know the tribes, but I was looking at the different genetics. So there was some very short tribes there that were sort of 5 foot wandering around together. And then there was some people in between, about sort of, 5'8", and they'd have their hair differently, and they'd be different face painted. And
this is Kenya, right?
Yeah, in Kenya. And then
Wales or Scotland.
So far. And then walking down the side would be some Zulu warriors with their spears and their arrows and the bows. And they're there mixing, obviously come down to make some money from the tourists who would pay them to have a photograph taken. So they're staying in their groups just for tourists like myself to go everyone's got to make money somehow. And it was great fun for, and an education for the tourists to go there and actually appreciate that this planet's not just about white people. There's lots of different cultures and creeds and different genetics here. And it's a massive education to see that. And for me, it was quite a surprise. And I shared quite a few jokes with some of the guys there. I remember I was trying to bartering for some a wood carving, and I was just seeing how much of my wife's clothes I could actually pass on to this guy for a wooden carving that probably took someone a week to make. And we're going on. He says, "No, that's not enough." And I pulled out another bag of stuff. Decided I was going to get rid of as much of her clothes as possible.
Well, who didn't like the clothes, you or her?
Yeah, no. I think it was just holiday clothes that we weren't going to use, and he just stopped me in here. And he said, "Hey, man," he said, "there's no, let's just stop this." He said, "I wouldn't let my sister wear those clothes," and that really put me in my place. And that was a big education. But actually, it was a shared laugh. We all, even my wife enjoyed that one. But a very interesting place. And so the little bit I experienced of Kenya, of Africa was it's certainly an education, and the people there are fantastic. But obviously that wasn't South Africa, and with such a large continent, Africa itself, a lot of people aren't even aware that Africa isn't a country, it's a continent.
It's a continent, indeed.
And, that's an education itself. And I can't remember how many countries there are within the continent of Africa.
I think it's 52, 53, roughly.
Yeah, so I mean, that's an education as well, isn't it? Mm. There's quite a few people might be listening to this, will be surprised by it. But the when you brought up in a very interesting country like South Africa, where did you move around much? Did you see any of the parts? Were there anything of interest which you thought, oh, this is I've never seen anything like this before, this is new? How the cultures change from region to region, alone country to country.
Oh yes, absolutely. So Durban has the, well, Durban, the main city that was closest to this town, Amanzimtoti. It's about the equivalent of about 15, 20 miles north of Durban. Durban is 15, 20 miles north of Amanzimtoti. Durban is well known to have the largest Indian population outside of India. So it's the influence in the culture is definitely there from India. So whether it being Muslim, Hindu, Hare Krishna, etc., that it's very steeped in that culture and tradition. In fact, it's where I learned a lot how to make Indian food, for example, from my father. It's the same thing from him. My godmother, who was involved with in the Hare Krishna society, doing a lot of healing in the sector, for gurus in the Hare Krishna society. That was something that you just grow up with, and that's something sort of normal. So when I was about 14, 15 years old, we moved to Johannesburg. Then it changes completely because the culture isn't predominantly Indian anymore, or that's not, non-white culture. It's really the true Rainbow Nation experience where you've got a little bit of everything. When we first moved there, I thought it was going to be very Afrikaner dominance and Afrikaans, from Afrikaans people, Afrikaans culture, things that that you never thought of as a small kid in Durban. You don't know what the culture is going to be like in Johannesburg. We used to go visit my grandmother frequently in Johannesburg, and that's all I knew what Johannesburg was. So yeah, it changes quite a lot. Then if you go to Cape Town, for example, where we've just been a couple of times on holiday, then it changes once again. I don't think Cape Town really has a predominant culture, just people who sort of worship the mountain, everything regards around Table Mountain. It's quite a sense of pride, I think, from people who live in Cape Town. It's a bit of a standing joke for the rest of South Africa, but, every country sort of has them.
So you went to primary school in Johannesburg?
I went to primary school in Amanzimtoti.
Okay. And what was the primary school like? You've got any fond memories of that?
I have nothing but fond memories of it. I went to a primary school in Amanzimtoti for 3 years, then changed to a different primary school not too long after that. That was life-changing. I think that taught me a lot about leadership per se. Not that I could call myself a leader at all, but you, as a child, you learn what it takes to become a leader, mostly because you're sort of in that young boy competitive state and you want to sort of be competitive with anything and everything. But you also realize that in order to be competitive, in order to do that, there are teachers that sort of guide you. Also what it means to be competitive, what it means to be a leader. Everybody wants to be a prefect. So you would do anything possible to become this prefect because you would get told this is what stands you in good stead later on in life. Back then that's what you were told, is you listen to your teachers and you do be a good boy, do what you're told, and you become a prefect. Very naive back then. The thing I learned probably from that is you learn certain good habits. You try and participate in many things possible, and that's what I learned from it. It's just participate in as much things as possible. Then you learn from anything and everything, even if it's a small nugget or pearl of wisdom, you learn, you take it with you.
Yeah, I know massive cultural differences between, it just goes on and on and on, but just one, picking one thing out of it between a sort of primary school, typically UK child, and a primary school child living on the continent of Africa, would be that you hardly wore shoes. Is that right?
No. Okay. Everyone thinks that. We don't ride lions or hippos to school either. Our runways are actually made of concrete as well. And that's not true. there are some schools in South Africa which to this day that they don't let, they allow the children to run barefoot for a little bit. I think that's more to do with current sort of health reasons. I know when it gets too hot.
You're talking about earthing.
Yeah, to a point. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, a lot of people won't know about that in the UK. There's a couple of documentaries, I think, that sort of been on Netflix talking yes. about earthing and the point of having your skin and your feet close to the earth, like we used to live.
Yes.
And these days we have insulation on our feet, the rubber sole. People say, oh, that's a load of rubbish. They've never heard of anything like that before. But it's become a bit of a fact with a lot of cultures.
Yes.
They recognize that this is something that's happened in the past, and they're starting to realize there's been a lot of health benefits and some surprising changes in people's health since they've been deliberately walking outside in barefoot so they can actually earth against the planet. I guess that's why they call it the earth. An earthing, you know, it makes sense along those lines.
Very so, simple to understand.
Then you went to senior school?
Yes, we moved to, from when I started senior school or high school, they call it in South Africa, in Amanzimtoti. It was literally going, you know, from big fish in a small pond to being a small fish in a big pond.
Yeah.
Mainly because the high school that I went to in there were only two high schools in Amanzimtoti, two English speaking and one Afrikaans speaking. The English speaking one that I chose to go to probably was a mistake in hindsight. I think there were about 3,500, close to 4,000 students in that particular school. It was big. It was a bit too big. It was a miserable experience. High school was not an enjoyable experience for me whatsoever.
I'm not sure it's meant to be an enjoyable experience
for anybody. Yeah.
And then what did you do after that? What did you do when you sort of, did you go to college? Did you go to university? And what made you do, if you did go to any of these, what made you do it?
Straight out of high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I was planning on studying medicine. Had no idea how I was going to get there. Was really lost and wayward. Had all these ideas and all these ambitions, but I had absolutely no clue what I wanted to do. Very lost, you could say. Wanted to be a jack of all trades, but I was, becoming master of none. I really love learning a lot. So it was becoming a little bit sort of quite traumatic for me to decide to pick one thing and do one thing. So like everybody at that age who didn't know what the hell they wanted to do, I just pretty much got a job. It was a regular job working as a cashier at a pizzeria, pretty much. Then decided, well, look, I need to do something a little bit more serious. Worked at a printing shop, became a manager of that, decided this was really not for me, either. Through some support, I think, nearly a boot to the arse from my father and my godmother, in that respect, not kick me out the house, but really give me a nice confidence, do something. Came to the UK as a working holiday, essentially. It was for an indefinite period, but ended up being here for, I think it was a year and a half, close to 2 years. I can't remember how long it was now. And in that time, I already had seen a chiropractor back in South Africa a couple of times. I was involved in quite a horrific car accident with a very good friend of mine, and he went there, had started developing really bad headaches that we refer to now as cluster headaches in the side of the temple of my head, and this was after the accident, and helped me out. And this, it was quite funny because it ended up being the brother-in-law in one of my high school teachers. And so I sort of knew him, and it ended up being that he was one of the first chiropractors in South Africa, and he had an amazing reputation. He was very well known in the chiropractic field, and I knew nothing about him. And absolutely loved what he was doing. I was blown away and started asking questions upon questions upon questions upon questions. So yeah, that's where the journey came.
Yeah, so you went to see a chiropractor for the headaches? That's weird.
Strange that, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And in South Africa, is it sort of recognized that you'd go to a chiropractor for headaches, or is it something which you just decided you would, someone recommended, or you just thought it made sense to you?
My father went to go see a chiropractor. Something happened, and he went to go see a chiropractor when we were living in the Manzimtoti. We were very young. He went to go see one of the students in the university, and it was a deaf guy. It was a deaf student that was studying chiropractic, and it helped him quite a lot, and he swore by it. And after the accident many, many, many years ago, he said to me, he said, well, look, let's just see if we can find you a chiropractor. And at that stage, in the crossroads of wanting to study medicine or doing something, I thought, okay, I have no idea what that is. And he was very, very, very interested in what he was doing. But at that stage, I was also committed about coming to the UK. Until I learned that there was a place you can study chiropractic here in the UK. Went to see the college, and it was a very tough decision to study, well, either there or in South Africa, and ultimately decided to go back to South Africa after my little stint here to study chiropractic. It's because I think I was here for about 3-4 months, and I said to my parents, I know what I'm gonna do, I know what I wanna study. And I was ready to go back home after about 3 months in the UK. But I thought to myself, that's also a bit of a waste opportunity to learn and have some fun. Stayed around for a while, and then went back, and the rest is history, really.
Where did you study? What university?
At University of Johannesburg.
Okay, nice. So that was you've never had any regrets from training as a chiropractor?
I think they had some regrets. no real regrets, to be honest with you. It was a hard time. I won't lie. It's South Africa having its own economic issues, and you know, we had our own battles with the affordability issues, but we made it work. But the real challenge.
I'm just thinking, it sounds a mirror image of my chiropractic experience. I had hard times, and I had affordability situations with the economy, with my own finances. It was horrific. So I think there must be a common thing anywhere on the planet. Anyone going to university, obviously, I can appreciate you're talking about the economy of the actual country as well. But it seems to be a common theme.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wasn't alone. It's working a couple of jobs to help out. So we had student loans and all that help, I think, as everyone does. But the real struggle came in is on my first day. My first day back in my third year of uni, my mom passed away. So that was an interesting beginning halfway amongst my studies. And I had a lot of support from friends. It was an interesting time. So no regrets, but it got harder, somewhat harder after that.
Now that sounds a really challenging story. And to lose, you know, your mother during that time would be enough for some people to have dropped out of university completely, and even dropped out of life. You know, some people have done. You know, who exactly, do you mind just, I don't know if you don't have to, but do you mind talking about your mother?
Oh, I have no problem. Yeah.
What sort of lady was she?
Very good question. My mom was, well, she was super kind, super loving, she was timid by nature, but you wouldn't want to sort of get her on her bad side. And I think a lot of kids say that about their mums, not alone about that. But even to this day, I find out things about my mom that I never knew of. She was a musician. She was an artist. She stopped playing music, and she stopped doing her art quite a while ago. but she was incredibly kind. She was really loving. She was smart as a whip. I think really in many also senses, kind of got a little bit wayward and lost in life a little bit. I think that was more to the fact that I think she knew she was ill and she was sick. So she didn't really know what to do, and she didn't really have that guidance. She didn't really have that advice. So it was one of the many things about the great things about chiropractic. What we do as chiropractors is we sort of somewhat have an understanding of what we can do to help guide people to just be a bit healthier, lead a slightly better, healthier life.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's the education of being a chiropractor. There's something that you can offer everybody, and it's also even help, even if we can't help them, we can help them as far as we can. We know when to refer to somebody else, and we know who to refer to. So that's quite a skill in itself, and one that often people forget, that we have that education of knowing, recognizing problems that people have, and being able to refer to the correct place. MRIs, etc. You know, they can be obviously very useful. Do you mind me asking about your father?
Oh yeah, he's still living in Johannesburg. He just carries on. He's had a very colorful experience in life, really. He grew up in a very patriarchal apartheid era of South Africa, and which was very, very difficult for him, because he basically had to remain in the closet for many years, especially during his services in the army, which of course, you know, didn't have the modern don't ask, don't tell policy. Back in the apartheid era, it was a case of if you think that you, if there's any hint of the possibility that you may be gay, you might, you know, either be thrown out the army or beaten to death within the barracks the same night. So I don't think he's ever talked about that. He's never really mentioned that, but I can only imagine that that would have been part of the reasoning why you would sort of keep your identity towards yourself. You know, and it wasn't a thing in South Africa to come out in back in the day. So it was only in late in the 1990s, and once we moved to Johannesburg, that it came out. I think it was by sort of accident, but that happy accident led him to live his life and his true being. You know, mm-hmm. He was just being true to himself.
Yeah. And do you have any brothers or sisters?
I have a sister. Yes, I have a younger sister. She, interestingly, I like to joke that she was born 1 year, 2 weeks, 3 days, 4 hours apart from me. But it doesn't really work out exactly like that. But yeah, she's actually here in the UK. She lives in Surrey with her husband and her daughter. And she's been here for a little bit longer than I have at the moment.
The children? You've got your, are you an uncle?
Oh, I'm an uncle of a beautiful young lady. Her name is Talin. Very typical my sister to have an exceptionally unique name for my daughter, for my niece.
Yeah.
So she's only got the one kid, and she's a stepmom to another two.
And you're married, you have children?
Not married, not yet.
Yeah.
We were supposed to have been. I think a lot of things happened in between 2020 and 2022, as the world knows very well, mm-hmm. of, that put a hamper in many spanners in the work. We were supposed to get married in 2020. It just hasn't happened yet. I think much to the dismay of my father-in-law. I wouldn't call him conservative to exactly, but somewhat conservative. I think he would have preferred if we were married.
I'd prefer that you were married.
It'll happen soon. It'll happen eventually. Yes, I have a beautiful daughter, beautiful little girl. I'm a proud father of a wonderful 11 and a half year old boy.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah.
So you spoke about your mother. I hope you don't mind me asking one more question. Now, you said that she was a musician, and I'm interested in music myself. Did she play a musical instrument? Was she a singer? Do song a singer songwriter? What was she?
She was learning how to play the piano, so she was she was a pianist. Yeah,
she was a pianist. Mm. No, brilliant, lovely. And then, because I mean, I can't help. We've got to let you know something. I'm at the moment. I'm learning to play the Kobza, which is a Ukrainian guitar, the South American, Hawaiian ukulele,
yes,
and obviously acoustic guitar and flute, the harmonium, and the djembe. All this stuff is very interesting to me. Sort of tribal music, that sort of thing. So yeah, I couldn't resist asking about that.
Oh yeah, of course.
With yourself, mm-hmm. moving from South Africa, and you obviously moved. I know that you moved to the Netherlands. What was the reason mm-hmm. why you moved to the Netherlands? And was that the third move, or have you moved many, many times?
Many times before, but within South Africa, I think. Mm-hmm. Well, I should say probably many times around Johannesburg, mm-hmm. But ultimately we moved to the Netherlands. I was offered a job at a very busy clinic in the Netherlands, because a very good friend of mine who I studied with, a chiropractic in the Netherlands, he was leaving. He was going to start his own practice in Maastricht in the Netherlands, and I'm probably going to get berated about how I pronounce that. Maastricht, some people call it Maastricht or Maastricht. He left to start his own practice, so he needed somebody to replace him. He knew that I wanted to move abroad for the experience. I think I knew how busy he was, and I thought it would be an excellent opportunity to learn. We'd like to think of, maybe he probably thinks of it himself that way, that he comes from it's almost a Gonstead royalty, if you want to call it. So he was very much a Gonstead practitioner.
Which is a type of chiropractic.
Yes, indeed,
a specific one.
It is essentially a way of approaching the patient from a certain point of view, incredibly mechanistic, to a point where you're using x-rays or imaging to determine what is wrong. So most people think it's x-rays, but because that's what his name was, Clarence Gonstead, that's what he used. That was the medium of choice. So by Dutch law, we weren't allowed to take x-rays as chiropractors. So there's a way around that we use the IDEXA scan, the machine that uses to measure bone density scans for the people that don't know. Mm-hmm. And this particular machine was able to scan the entire spine. So you would be able to get a front to back view and a side view as well. So you would be able to see the important bits of the spine to see what needed would need to focus on. So that's how we got around with that. And his father was taught by Clarence Gonstead. He himself was adjusted by Clarence Gonstead. So there is, in a sense, quite a bit of Gonstead royalty, we called it. A wealth of information. He had been at that time been practicing for more than 30 years. And had been seeing tens of thousands of consultations, had built, I think about 6 or 7 clinics for himself. So really established chiropractic in that part of the Netherlands, did an amazing job. So to work there was a lovely clinic to work for, lovely people. Dutch people are wonderful. We loved where we lived. We ultimately moved there for the experience, and we didn't know how long we were going to be there for. We had no time frame. It would have been nice to have stayed a little bit longer, but circumstances dictated that we couldn't. We had then planned on moving from the Netherlands to the UK. Majority of my family and my closest friends are here, so the support network was huge. especially with for my son at the time. He was starting to really battle with the language, speaking three languages himself at that time. It was starting to get a little bit difficult. We were planning on moving in. We had shipped all our things in February of 2020. We were going to South Africa to see some family and friends. In March 1st of 2020, we landed, and 3 weeks later, for some reason, the world shut down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that well. the world shut down. Personally, for myself, I had 6 weeks while I was watching very carefully what was actually happening, and because we were the only type of healthcare professional that you could see in the UK,
mm-hmm.
I became stacked out for the rest of what we know as the C word. So I never stopped for 6 weeks off, and then non-stop right the way through.
Wow.
During it, I opened two businesses as well. So chiropractic has never been so busy ever. Mm. This has been just the busiest time. And I think it's been very useful for a lot of people, because they've come to see a chiropractor instead of perhaps going to see their GP for musculoskeletal problems. Where the GP would more than likely, certainly first of all, just put them on painkillers.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that sometimes that would be very appropriate. But
well, hasn't it been fascinating that more and more people after the big C word incident, that people are coming to see chiropractors more for their overall health and wellness, and looking, getting their neurological functioning checked out instead of just a little bit of pain. That's what's probably astounded me the most. That's what's come out of COVID.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. I mean, as far as how it's used, my own experience has been that I could open up anywhere, and within 2 months, I could be seeing over 100 people a week.
Mm.
No problems at all. It's just very, very needed at the moment, during COVID and at the moment. And I don't see anything really changing. I'm certainly hoping it's going to carry on in this way, where people are using either ourselves or other physical therapists of some sort to actually help them with their biomechanical problems, but like you say, also for just advice on water,
yep,
nutrition.
Yeah,
people don't realize that chiropractors have got that experience and that qualification to actually help people with things like nutrition.
Absolutely.
So yeah, but moving on back to where we were before, you know, going back before the sort of 2020, when you were in the Netherlands. Is that where you met your wife?
No, Claudine and I, we met back in Johannesburg. Yeah, we moved together. It was quite a bit of a whirlwind sort of relationship before I basically said to her, listen, I've got this opportunity to move into the Netherlands. Do you want to come with? Again, you must imagine this very English-speaking South African asking her very Afrikaans father, a very conservative man, you know, do you mind if I take your daughter to the Netherlands with me? It was quite interesting at times to negotiate that.
Yeah, I can imagine. It sounds quite painful. Yeah. And then so you turned up in the UK and you started working as a chiropractor, or did you do something else?
Well, from after the Netherlands, yes. It was before moving to the Netherlands, I got a position as working as a chiropractor on the cruise ship. That was probably one of the best and hardest working periods of my life.
A cruise ship?
On a cruise ship.
You sing, it's dancing.
I do sing and I do dance, but that's not what I was doing on the cruise ship.
Right.
Well, not in front of people.
Yeah. What were you doing on the cruise ship?
Well, singing and dancing in my cabin, yeah, surely. As a chiropractor, I was there basically to do, you know, chiropractic things.
Right.
Yes, it was trying to get the word of chiropractic onto the cruisers, knowing that there is a chiropractor on board, because of the health and wellness part that cruise ships, they want, this particular cruise ship company wanted to go. They were so I don't know if you know anything about cruise ships and how and sort of how they.
I've been on a ferry across the Mersey. I know the ferry across the Mersey, and I do a bit of singing and dancing as I go across that. But no, that's
absolutely right. I don't know how long the ferry is on the Mersey, these particular cruises I went on to were about were either 1 or 2 weeks long. And people would come on board, they would live their lives for 2 weeks. There are different cruise ship companies out there that offer there's essentially 3-star hotels, then there's 4 stars, 5 stars, and up to 6 stars. And some I worked on a 4-star cruise line that had a very, very good reputation for the spa company that they used. Health and wellness were integral a part of this particular cruise ship company. I was the first chiropractor on board on this particular cruise ship. They had used a chiropractor on board with great success. I think the ship still uses the one, but it was good fun. It was really good fun. You woke up and my office was basically in a different country almost every other day. It was outstanding. It was an outstanding experience. Meeting lovely people, both guests and the people who worked on board the ship. Very interesting. But ultimately, it's not really something that you can do long term. You don't see as many people as you would on land, and it's a totally different way of life.
So let's get this right there, because I need to clear up a few things in my mind. I'm terribly sick. I'm really struggling with my body. I've got terrible pain down my legs. I've got a headache, neck pain, lost my range of motion in my spine, and I've obviously turned up to go onto a cruise ship. Is that how you became busy on there with a lot of people like that? Or was it actually, because a lot of people come see a chiropractor because they think that's the position you've got to be in to see somebody.
Yeah, so that's exactly it. It kind of was a case of people knew that there was a chiropractor on board. So it was almost as if people had to know what chiropractic was in order to be helped. Part of my responsibilities was to do to give as many health talks as possible. I was asked to do at least one every cruise. Ended up doing about 3 or 4 per week, just because I enjoyed it and I enjoy talking about it. I love advocating it, talking about what it does, trying to get the word out there as much as possible, even if the people didn't come see me, just to.
I don't want to do the full talk now, but what sort of things would you like to sort of summarize with people? You know, they're on holiday and they're having a cup of coffee and they think, oh, we're going to listen to this guy, he's doing a talk on spinal health, on, you know, what sort of things would they be sitting there wanting to listen to? What would you be talking about?
Yeah, exactly that. The way I'd frame it is you would talk about pain, and that would be your main subject header. What pain is, where pain comes from, why we have pain, different types of pain, what the different types of pain mean, everything that you can about pain, because the majority of people, they know exactly what most of us, we all know what pain is, but the majority of people don't know where it comes from, what causes it, and what we do as chiropractors to help with that.
Yeah, a lot of people, if they have pain, they think it's bad, don't they? It's pain's bad, you know, not, lack of pain is good and healthy, but I have to explain to some people that if you have a real problem with your body and sometimes you're not feeling any pain, that can be a very bad thing as well.
It's dangerous if you leave your hand on a hot stove for just a couple of minutes, and if you don't feel pain, how do we know what to do?
Yeah, the nervous, that it would direct you, that person, to there might be something wrong with the nervous system, not being able to jump, the reflexes, etc. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
So you talk about the movement, the range of movements. You talk about, you know, when you're looking at the spine, I have one just behind me. What else would you be talking about? The range of motion, the parts of the spine, what's inside the spine, spinal cord, how the nervous system works. What is the nervous system, brain, spinal cord, and nerves? where they go, the function of the body. That's the main. It's the main, if you like, the computer. Is that the sort of thing that you'd be speaking about?
Sounds like you've done this once or twice yourself. That's
exactly. I've done it a few times. I do it a few times most days. Because yes. It's well, then it's one of the few things that we don't learn when we're at school. You know, this is an education, and we don't actually know how to look after our own body, and we don't understand what to recognize when it starts to go wrong.
And even then it's easy for us to understand it because we've got the educational background. We know what the differences between normal and abnormal. So to go and communicate that further of the differences between normal and abnormal, and keeping it as basic and as simple as possible, things that are tangible, things that people can see. For example, you've got that picture of your you've got the model of the spine behind you. Mm-hmm. You can see the different curvatures, and you talk about why the curvature in the neck needs to be this certain way, and what happens if it's very, very straight. And same things with the lower back. The majority of the population, you know, talk about, oh, they want a nice straight back, and you have to re-educate and say no, having a very straight back is not optimal. They get concerned that they've got this curvature in the middle of the back, and teaching them this is normal. There are extremes, of course, and you've got to re-educate everybody. But again, you're talking about what's normal and abnormal in a more of a tangible universe, if you want, that it's keeping it simple, what you can or can't do, what's in and out of your control.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know that you've been involved in a lot of sports in your life. And there is obviously a reason for me asking that. We've been a chiropractor. There's lots of sports people who've been very successful in their life during that career of sport, who've got involved in becoming a chiropractor because they learnt about the body, they learnt how to use it, then they learnt about the nutrition, everything else, and how to sit and how to look after your spine. And I thought, you know what, I've had some good chiropractic care, in fact, probably the best care I've had. And then we'll decide, you know what, that's what I'm going to do next. I'm going to learn how to become a chiropractor and see if I can offer this. I want to offer it to other people, which is exactly what I did. I had my education was working with, I was a metal worker for my early days, early career. And then I had some damage to my spine when I was 20. And from that moment onwards, I was asking around, what should I go and do about my back? I was going to see a GP, so I saw my GP. Gave me a little bit of information about sitting correctly, and this might be the reason for the problem, not the huge amounts of lifting that I've been doing at work, and then prescribe me some medication, painkillers. And obviously that can be very good information sometimes, and it can be a good way of, in the short term, if you've gone and pulled a muscle. But if it's something more than that, if you've got some much more serious problems, which I did, then obviously painkillers won't be the thing. So I went for it to see chiropractic care. I had an x-ray. And I saw there at 20 years old, I actually damaged three of my vertebrae. There was three different levels of thinning of the little spaces between the bones. Mm-hmm. And so they'd lost their height. So they mm-hmm. called the discs, the spaces between the vertebrae, as you know, Brenton. We measured them, or my chiropractor measured them and said, we've got some problems there. Looks what we've herniated the discs in those areas. And they were slowly losing their plumpness, mm-hmm. and that's not always a good thing. And my brain was recognizing I've got problems there, and was shortening the muscles in the area to prevent movement. So I become very stiff in that area as well. They said, what we need to do is, if we leave it like that over a period of 20 or 30 years, those areas might fuse, not for sure, but they might fuse, because as the discs become more and more worn, bones gets closer together, then there's a possibility that the bones will eventually meet each other and start to fuse together. And certainly my experience is that he was quite correct with what he said, because after x-raying lots and lots of people in the time that I've been a chiropractor, I don't x-ray anymore, but when I was doing regularly x-raying my clients, certainly from the age of 70s and they're into their 80s and definitely into the 90s, there was so much fusion into someone's spine that the person who's going very late for chiropractic care in the 80s and 90s can end up having a spine that looks like a Charles Dickens chimney. And but often, not an awful lot of pain, but certainly, but just because they're fused, no movement. So
that's a brilliant metaphor, isn't it? Yeah, Charles Dickens.
Yeah, people get it straight away. And so for me, it's my chiropractor said, what we need to do is to regularly come for chiropractic care, certainly trying somewhere around about every 6 weeks, have an adjustment to try and keep that good. So originally I saw the chiropractor, probably I saw him about twice a week for about 6 or 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards they gradually spaced those out. And that worked for me. For some people, they need more. Some people, they need less.
Absolutely, but yeah.
That was good care for me. And I had had some osteopathy. I'd had some sports massage in the past. And they were all good. They were all healthy. They were all useful. But nothing helped me like this particular chiropractor. And it really made me want to become a chiropractor.
You think it's because they were really getting to the root cause of the issue with the discs and...
Yeah,
with the joint itself not moving.
You know, a bit of superficial massage on the muscles was not going to solve the problem of how my brain saw that area.
No, absolutely.
And it just needed to be re-educated. And of course, that's what I believe we do. We re-educate people's spines. And
absolutely,
with massive interest for my clients' brains as we manipulate that area. The nervous system is watching eagerly as what we thought was a join was actually a joint, and when it realizes it's a joint again, that's right, it's a joint, not a join. Let's start to move it. Let's use the muscles appropriately,
mm-hmm.
and people can start moving. The range of motion comes back, and as the function goes up, we've all found as chiropractors, as the function goes up, the pain goes down. And so that's just what I've done. You know, do I have pain in my back now? I sometimes have just some stiffness, but you know, this is 35 years later,
mm-hmm.
and of all the different jobs I could be doing, I'm not playing basketball possibly from a wheelchair, but actually working as a chiro. So it can be a very useful thing. Not to say that everyone's going to end up in a wheelchair with back problems.
Mm.
I am certainly not saying that, but some people have. Depends on how bad it is and what the severity of the damage to the nerves coming from the spinal cord or the spinal cord itself.
But
this is the sort of thing we could speak about in detail. We have clients in. Bringing it back to you, which is the most important thing right now. When you trained as a chiropractor and eventually moved to the UK, where was the first place that you worked as a chiro? And you know, how long were you there for? And then what did you move on from? You know, how did you get to there? How did you get to me? How did you get to come to Daventry Chiropractic and what we're doing here?
Good question. When we decided that we were going to the UK and we got trapped in South Africa during COVID, it was our definition of long COVID. because of certain travel restrictions and South African lockdown was quite extensive and it was quite difficult. So we didn't know exactly when or how when we were going to move over. Initially, when we moved everything over, all our possessions from the Netherlands, we had moved it here to the UK. We were going to be working for the same people that I believe that you worked for a while ago. We've got some common friends that are still working there, some that have left, some have come and gone. I got in touch with some other people that worked for the same group of people. It was quite a big bunch of clinics, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know how many clinics they have. It's
because obviously we're talking about the company, mate, that Hausa, and didn't know whether we were allowed to sort of mention them or not, but of course they were great company. I learned an awful lot from them. There was some really good training that I received when I was there, and it certainly helped me with how I run my business and how I deal with my clients.
Absolutely.
It was a good thing. I've learned a lot from South Africans. it's been very useful. Hence the reason why I guess you were actually when I found out that you were possibly looking for work in the future as a chiropractor. I was very hot on having a conversation with you and bringing you on.
That's pretty much where it went. it didn't go exactly that route, but ended up talking to somebody who used to work for Halsa as well, and they had their own clinic in Milton Keynes. We got to chat, we struck a bit of a friendship, and moved over to Milton Keynes. So there's the clinic in Milton Keynes eventually got bought out by somebody who used to work there. Lovely guy, young, he's extremely passionate, and extremely adept at chiropractic. He's really ambitious. The reason for me moving on, it's mostly to do with the needs of my kids. It's to do with certain long explanation. I suppose we can go for a good few minutes on all those reasons. Mm-hmm. I think being in a big city, and being in a big city like Milton Keynes is quite vastly different from being in where we are here in Daventry. And
Daventry is cool, man.
I love it. Love it. Full of cool people.
Nice, and it's a nice quiet town, and I've made it a home to myself as well. So if it's all right with you, Brent, I just want to sort of finish off. I think we've learned such a lot about you and your moves, you know, almost throughout the world. And I think you've visited a lot of different countries over the years. You've
have indeed. Of this stuff. Have and, indeed. Yeah.
It'll be very interesting to know a little bit more. Perhaps we'll talk about that in the future. But I want to finish up with the sort of jewel in the South African crown, which is something we haven't spoken about, and that's one of your skills, your sort of interesting leisure time experiences has been sports, and the things mm-hmm. that you've actually achieved with sports. So anyone who's actually listened this far will learn something a little bit more juicy about Brent. So if you don't mind explaining, Brent, what you've achieved and what you've done and why you've got into sports and
yes. Growing up, I think most kids play rugby. Most boys play rugby in South Africa. So wasn't a big thing for me until when I first moved over here to the UK. Funnily enough, for the first time, got very much into it. We had a good friend working at the place I was working at it was a private school in Essex, and struck an accord with the rugby coach who was there, who was, surprise surprise, he was a South African. Because I had been doing various sports growing up, he got more and more and more into rugby. He trained me, we got into powerlifting, got stronger, got more sort of adept at it, and just played a bit more and more and more of it. That was the one side of it. The powerlifting was the other side of it. And of course, on and off ever since I've been young, so my whole life with martial arts. And it's not something I talk about often.
No one talks about Fight Club.
No, first rule.
Yeah.
No, now we've been struck off the record. Now, it really is that to me has been simply amazing. The last bit of my experience when living in the Netherlands, struck a friendship with half Indonesian, half Dutch kung fu instructor. He was fantastic. It really changed my view on people in general. That's what martial arts really do. It is one of the ultimate ways of learning about yourself, about being human. Essentially, it's about movement, it's about thinking, it's about connecting mind, body, spirit. Interpreted in many different ways, as spiritual as it may sound, as metaphysical it may sound, as physical it may sound, biological, chemical, everything. I think martial arts has an important component to play in that, and especially when you're connecting your emotions to your thinking, and the interplay between that. That was a big thing, and you learn so much about yourself, how not to necessarily control your emotions, but not letting your emotions control you, etc., etc., etc. There's a thousand things you can talk about. You can really have in-depth conversations mm-hmm. about that. and how it ties in with Eastern philosophy and how it ties in with certain Western philosophies and what we used to talk about. And he himself had been brought up learning of Jeet Kune Do, which is Bruce Lee's version of Kung Fu, because he took it from he learned growing up doing Wing Chun Kung Fu. He was a master of Wing Chun and then sort of implemented it a little bit one step, and which became Jeet Kune. He learned pretty much Jeet Kune Do himself, and then a Indonesian Kung Fu, developed his own sort of version of that, which we called Mechan Pechilat, a type of Indonesian Kung Fu that was a lot more functional, fascinating, absolutely fascinating.
Did you complete at all?
No, not martial arts. No, that was more for more personal growth. You do your gradings and everything you do, but never competitions. No.
Did you compete with the powerlifting?
I did. Yes. That I did a few competitions, some of them in the UK. I did one in South Africa. But when I was doing it here in the UK, I did quite a bit.
And was there any sort of local competitions?
Was local competitions, in and around Essex mostly, did pretty well. I was brand new at it. I had a great coach. It was something that I thought that I could, do going forward.
Who was your coach?
Was my South African, teacher friend. Yes, he was a rugby player and powerlifter himself.
Okay. So brought it in.
A bit full circle.
I've got it. Well, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Look,
yeah.
Brent, I want to thank you so much for coming on here today. It's been a pleasure having you on. And I know we're going to have a lot more of this in the future. I think there's so much we can talk about as far as chiropractic,
absolutely.
Nervous system.
Absolutely.
Nutrition. Healthy lifestyle. I mean, just look at us, both of us sitting here looking so healthy, well into our 90s. I was looking earlier, actually. I mean, I already just started to wear glasses because I've suddenly reached 54, and I'm thinking that the pair of us here, we would probably make good contenders for the Bald Proclaimers.
Well, you speak for yourself here, sir. There's still some remnants left here.
No, but thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And if you've enjoyed it today, if you've enjoyed listening to us talking about chiropractic and how Brent's journey through life, then please like and share. And I look forward to seeing you on the very next Being Human. Thanks for listening.